From WGCU, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Dire wolves, mammoths, and giant Ice Age armadillos. No, it's not a fantasy novel. These creatures roamed around Florida 13,000 years ago. Researchers know this from what they've uncovered at the old Vero dig near present-day Vero Beach. Coming up, we speak with a researcher leading the team at this year's dig and how they may be close to answering a century-old question about exactly how old these artifacts are. We'll also talk with an archaeologist about similar ancient treasures right here in Southwest Florida. Plus, the hurdles faced by new immigrants in the United States are many, but some of the toughest obstacles are legal ones. Here in Southwest Florida, there's only a handful of attorneys who specialize in immigrant law. But now one group is looking to change that, and they've joined forces with one of the most dedicated and passionate immigration attorneys in Immokalee, Sister Maureen Kelleher. She'll join us later to talk about the Land of Opportunity Fund. First, the news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. It's called the Old Vero Site, and it contains some of the most spectacular finds of human history in the New World. It's also where researchers are digging up everything from Ice Age armadillos to human artifacts dating back 13,000 years. Joining us to talk about the new and exciting finds at the Old Vero dig site is archaeologist Andy Hemmings with the Old Vero Ice Age Site Committee. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Hi, Julie. Thank you very much for having us.
I'm glad to have you, and also joining us in studio to talk about how finds at the Old Vero site connect to similar finds in our corner of Southwest Florida is Sarah Ayers-Rigsby with the Florida Public Archaeology Network. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. Thrilled to be here.
Have you ever come across an arrowhead or a fossil in Florida? What questions do you have about our region's ancient past? You can connect with us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCL, or visit WGCUnews.org for more ways to get in touch. Andy Hemmings with the Old Vero Ice Age Site Committee. The findings at the Old Vero site have been occupying researchers for 100 years. What are some of the major discoveries that you've had at the site over the years?
Well, we've replicated some of the discoveries of about half of the extinct animals that were found by Elias Sellards originally, and that includes a lot of the really rather exotic species that are just not in Florida anymore, and oftentimes not things you would have thought were ever in Florida.
Like what?
A couple of good examples would be mammoth and mastodon. Everybody knows about those, but we have here at the Vero site three kinds of ground sloths, including one called a Rhemotherium that was actually bigger than a mammoth or mastodon. It would have been about 18 feet tall when it was sitting on its haunches, like stripping branches, eating browse. We have other strange things like tapirs, capybaras, a couple of llamas, and of course for us the most recent big excitement is to find bison. We talk about Florida being a savanna, very dry and grassy, not forested and wet in the Pleistocene, and to find an animal that really represents that has been really exciting for us.
Well, it kind of gives you a clue as to what kind of an environment we were dealing with at that time and how different it is from now.
Yeah, absolutely. Both the environment itself and the, as you might say, the players on that landscape, very, very different, a very alien world than it is today.
Well, yeah, an 18-foot-tall sloth, I cannot imagine. Did he move slow? I guess he would. By definition, sloths kind of move slow.
It's even in their name.
Yeah. Well, take me back to the first findings at the Old Vero site back in 1912. That was when they first discovered it?
That's when it was probably first exposed. Vero was basically a wet, swampy, marshland west of the Atlantic Coastal Ridge. And so the Indian River Farms Company decided to dig a canal, drain all this property, and sell off five-acre lots. When they started digging this canal, a couple of local gentlemen started finding some extinct animal bones sticking out of the wall of the canal and got the attention of the then state geologist, Elias Sellards, who said, keep looking, there's interesting stuff here, there may be even more interesting stuff. And within about 2 years, it went from being a paleontological site to an archaeological site when human bones and human artifacts were found in two different layers of dirt with those extinct animals.
So there's two different, their paleontology is when you're digging up animals, and then when you have archaeology is when you're getting human and human civilization.
Yes, yes, exactly. And so in 1915, 16, when this is really starting to develop and get a lot of press, the very notion that human beings were here in the New World in the Pleistocene is a very controversial proposition. And so there was a lot of bickering back and forth.
Are they still bickering?
Well, they bickered for about 6 or 8 years. Then most of the people kind of quieted down and moved on to other sites and other kinds of evidence from other places. And so the site really got hung with an asterisk for about a century. And the asterisk is really, we just don't know. What's the legitimate real age of the human occupation at the Vero site? And the honest answer is, we don't know. And that's really what was one of the, you know, driving forces to initiate the work that we're part of now.
Did that start in 2008?
Right around that time, the county had money to install a water treatment facility that was going to go right through the site and destroy quite literally where we're excavating today. And so they found out, oh, the site was right here, and we don't want to wreck it. And so they did something else, you know, other projects. But it stirred up enough local interest and the interest of other archaeologists, most notably Barbara Purdy, who's retired from the University of Florida. And she initiated some tentative work on the site and got a lot of the people here interested. And the people in town essentially formed the Old Vero Ice Age Site Committee by 2009 or so.
And so the goal of this now is to answer that 100-year-old question of how old this is.
Right. That's probably the number one question. And so we want to work on that. And that's, of course, what we've been doing, among other things. But, that's the $10,000 question, if you will, is when exactly did people arrive in Vero at this site? And what kind of things did they do to make a living on that rather alien landscape we've been discussing a little bit?
Yeah, I just can't imagine encountering an. I keep visualizing an 18-foot-tall sloth. I just can't.
Well, we also had the 8 or 12-foot sloth and the 14-foot sloth.
Okay, I mean, you know,
very popular place.
You are not kidding about it being an alien landscape. I mean, that's just. And then now you have bison too.
Yeah, correct. Well, I should fill in some of the rest of the picture of the Pleistocene as well. We have quite a number of other very interesting animals, some of which we've found parts of their remains that have been very informative to us lately as well. We have a lot of carnivores, the dire wolf, a particularly large version of wolves, basically. They're not just on Game of Thrones. They're a real thing, and the ones on TV are actually not as big as the real ones. The saber cats, jokingly named, you would think, somebody with a good sense of humor named it Smilodont fatalis. a 600-pound saber-toothed cat is most certainly fatalis.
Yeah, that would be fatal.
And also, the American lion was also present here, and that's another cat that large males could run over 600 pounds. Again, you pretty much pay attention to the environment around you. You need to be in tune with what's going on because we're maybe in the middle of the food chain in that environment.
Yeah, absolutely. So what kind of things relating to humans have you found?
A number of artifacts, unfortunately only a couple so far from our in-place excavations, but I'm sitting here with crossed fingers, and if I had some wood in arm's reach, I'd knock on it. But we anticipate that what we've been finding in our Pleistocene soil is indicative of, in fact, a pre-13,000-year-old occupation of the site by humans. The specific artifacts we've found so far include a number of small, very used-up diagnostic projectile points. So far, the earliest ones we've seen are Kirk points, which are at the end of the early Archaic, roughly 10,000 years ago.
So you're talking about spear tips?
Yes, probably actually on darts. They would have probably used atlatls and launched slender spears. If you use the darts as spears, they don't hold up very well. But probably designed to be actually a launched weapon system.
Kind of like an early bow and arrow?
It's in some respects the precursor. It's kind of its own parallel thing. The darts would be 7 feet long probably or in that neighborhood and probably be capable of, you know, you can throw them 200-300 feet consistently and very accurately.
It's so funny how I'm trying to define something from the Pleistocene era through my frame of reference, which is a bow and arrow. It's kind of hard to suspend your own vision of things and then try to apply it.
You know the toy that's a long plastic stick that holds a tennis ball in the end of it, and if you flick it, you can throw a tennis ball a couple hundred feet for your dog?
Uh-huh.
That's basically the principle of an atlatl. Instead of being the tennis ball being held on, it's just you hold the dart against a hook on the end of the stick, and as you bring it forward, the dart is accelerated from the back end of it where that little hook is making contact.
That's pretty inventive, really. That's a pretty good idea. Well, Sarah Ayers Rigby with the Florida Public Archaeology Network, you were just at Mound Key with some researchers from the University of Georgia, and you say you came across some Spanish olive jars and shell tools. Tell me about that.
Great. Thank you, Julie. Yes. Yesterday I was out at Mound Key where Victor Thompson from the University of Georgia is excavating along with Bill Marquardt and Karen Walker from University of Florida. And they've partnered to try and figure out on Mound Key, there are several shell structures. So there's these shell mounds. And there are also large shell structures that they are trying to determine whether or not these structures were used to retain water or possibly to hold fish. So they think people – this was the Calusa people. So when we talk about sites like Vero, Vero is an extremely, extremely old site. Mound Key, what we were working on yesterday, was closer to about 800 years ago. And then the Spanish olive jars are obviously from after Spanish contact, so after 1500. So – it's really exciting. That site is actually great because it's a state park, so you can go out and visit it. FPAN is actually doing a kayak tour there on February 4th, so you can go to our website to get more information about it. But people were building these shell mounds and then living in the area. The Calusa were fished. And one of the really great things and the really unusual things about South Florida is that in other areas, agriculture had developed. But in South Florida, we don't actually have a lot of evidence for agriculture, even though we have these extremely complex societies with these complex earthworks. And we think it's because the natural resources of the area were so rich. So that's the evidence we see when we go out to sites like Mound Key.
Do we have anything as old or even kind of approaching old as Vero? That site?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the things that makes Vero so special is that it's extremely unique. So there's only a handful of sites throughout the country that date to this time period, and even throughout North and South America that date to this time period, which is why what Andy and his crew are doing is so important. When we talk about these older sites, typically we refer to them as Paleo-Indian sites. So that's when people first start settling North America. A lot of times we see what we call Clovis technology at these sites. So Clovis technology is roughly 10,000 to 13,000 years ago. And it's basically it describes a toolkit. So we see these fluted stone points that are a hallmark of the Clovis period. And it's actually named after a site in New Mexico where the first Clovis point was found. So it's named after a town in New Mexico. It's not a tribal name. Again, it just refers to this group of tools. And the closest site in this area that we have in terms of age, you know, we talk about Clovis as 10,000 to 13,000 years ago. There's a site in Northport called Little Salt Springs where they've been able to date it to 12,000 to 13,000 years ago. But then the next site, really we don't see a lot of evidence for sites until the Bay West site, which is an archaic mortuary pond, which dates to about 7,000 or 6,000 years ago. And that site, unfortunately, was destroyed by development. And I think Andy made a really great point talking about how people banded together to save the Vero site. Unfortunately, due to development, we're really losing a lot of these sites. And even though, you know, we all love South Florida, South Florida has been a great place to live for thousands of years. And we need to accommodate people who want to move here by building more condos, more facilities. It's also really important that we investigate archaeologically these areas.
Well, do you think it's challenging in our area because the things that we're looking for aren't as obvious? I mean, you know, when you think about archaeology, I'm thinking about Egypt, of course, because that's about as far as I got in my studies, like in fifth grade. But when you think about, you know, what you're looking for, what you're talking about, a Clovis point, that's like a, it looks like an arrowhead kind of, but it's not an arrowhead. You said it would go on a spear. And that's kind of something that's been kind of chipped away, and it kind of might look like a flat rock. So it might be kind of hard to, you know, filter that out of undeveloped areas in Florida. Do you think that that contributes to the difficulty in identifying what is a historically significant space?
Sure. I think what you're looking for, does impact it, but I think it's also just that these sites are so unique and ephemeral since they were made by hunter-gatherers who lived here, you know, thousands of years ago, and Florida's really changed a lot since then. Florida used to be a wide, grassy savanna. The weather was cooler. At the end of the Paleo-Indian period and, in the middle of the Archaic period, about 6,000 years ago, the Everglades start to form and the shoreline is reduced and Florida begins to take on the modern shape we have today. So that also impacts. There could be more Paleo-Indian sites that are submerged, especially off of Florida's west coast.
Yeah, probably. I mean, everything changes so much. But you were saying that tracking these Clovis points kind of make you able to track where humans happened to be.
Yes. You can see where people were migrating, how they initially settled. And this is a big question with archaeologists is how people settled areas. And there are sites like Vero and another very early site is the Page Ladson site that are even older than the Clovis technology. And people like Andy are really trying to pinpoint human occupation in those sites.
Mm-hmm. We are talking about the Old Vero archaeological site in South Florida that's been yielding remains of Ice Age animals and ancient North Americans for more than 100 years. We're also talking about local areas of interest for archaeologists and paleontologists. Our guests are archaeologist Andy Hemmings with the Old Vero Ice Age Site Committee and Sarah Ayers-Rigsby with the Florida Public Archaeology Network. Boy, that's a tongue twister sometimes. I wanted to ask you about a huge piece of stone that's 11,000 years old that came from 150 miles north of here that you found near Vero?
Yes, okay. Huge is a very relative term in this case, unfortunately. As Sarah was alluding to, that the stone that's used to make tools is usually not from right where you find the tool. And here at Vero, we're on a very lithic, poor part of the landscape. All of the stone was brought in at least 100 miles. Nothing closer than maybe the Peace River or probably between Orlando and Ocala. In the first year of excavation, on a layer just above a thing we dated to 11,000 years ago, so it's around 11,000-year-old piece of stone, somebody had carried a rock from near Ocala to Vero and knocked a big chunk of it off. It was a big core. It wasn't like a finished point or anything yet. It was early on in the manufacturing, which is kind of unusual because you don't really want to lug around the pieces you're going to throw away. And so the vast majority of all the little flakes we've ever found here are about the size of your pinky fingernail or smaller. They're tiny, tiny things. This piece, the huge piece, is about the size of your thumb. An extravagant waste of stone on this part of the landscape where there's none. But it's significant both because we know where it came from and we know how old it is. Unfortunately, it doesn't, you know, we can't look at it and say it's associated with some culture immediately after Clovis or with Clovis or whatnot, but we'll take it. It's clearly a human artifact brought here, you know, quite a long time ago. We've sort of been joking that it's either the very last day of the Pleistocene or the very first day of the Holocene that tool was being manufactured here on site.
Either that or somebody put it somewhere safe and forgot where they put it. That could be it, too. If it's only thumb-sized, you could lose that.
We do know that early people cached artifacts in many contexts. Clovis is notorious for it all over the country at this point. But mercifully for us, people are forgetful and messy, and they leave things, and we find them long, long after the fact.
I can't believe you're looking for things that are as small as a pinky finger nail. That's really small.
Oh, no, that's actually pretty good size. We have a very nice microscope and loops and such. We fine screen everything. So everything that comes out of our excavation goes through an 1/8-inch screen and a 1/16-inch screen. But I don't trust it, knowing there's lots of broken up bones and teeth and stuff. Worried that we'll miss seeds or little bits of enamel or whatnot. I chronically check our screen dirt with a 200 nanometer fine screen. And thus far, we haven't missed anything. We're really on top of it, and we're not missing little bits and pieces that are, too fine for a window screen. But, yeah, the small stuff is where there's a lot of information.
So, Matt, my producer, told me about the remains of an ancient armadillo that you found at the site. Can you tell me a little about this guy?
Yeah, this is a really splendid creature. there's probably 100 sites or so of paleontological interest where this animal is even present. It's called Holmesina, and it's a giant armadillo. It's not closely related to the modern armadillo, but it did have a shell with armor, essentially, is what you call it, dermal armor, skin armor, on its back. One of the scutes from that armor, the little individual pieces of bone, was found in the overburden, our disturbed dirt on top of the intact part of the site, in remarkably good condition. So we sent it up to the University of Georgia, and we were able to directly date it to 11,100 plus or minus 30 years. That's radiocarbon in calendar years, which they're not equal, unfortunately, and it's a little confusing. Basically comes back right at 13,000 years ago. It's essentially a bullseye in time for the Clovis occupation of the New World. And basically what we've been saying is essentially we know now for the first time that that's ever been dated directly in North America, that that animal was on the Clovis and pre-Clovis menu. We don't know if they ordered it yet. Hmm. One of the interesting things I should add on to that is that here at the site, we pushed the occupation conclusively to at least 11,000 years ago. We're knocking on the door with the things that we'll talk about shortly about our new finds and what we'll be working on this year to 13,000, 13,500, and maybe a little bit before that. But we know from other finds that people here in town have made of 1.5 Clovis points here in Vero. And what that tells us is we know that people were in Vero 13,000 years ago, if just a couple miles away from this incredible little swampy area with creeks running into it that drew an unbelievable wealth of plant and animal life. That those close people that were here in Vero, we fully expect they and potentially their progenitors were actually on the site, and I think that's what we're working on exposing now.
And we're basing that on the presence of the Clovis points.
Yeah, just a couple miles away. They're the farthest south on the Atlantic seaboard in North America that we know of. There's almost certainly more, but south of Vero, there's really nothing this early until you go over onto the west coast where Little Salt Spring and Warm Mineral Springs are.
Have they found things in other parts of the United States that are this old?
You reach a real interesting barrier at the beginning of Clovis time, somewhere in the, depending on who you ask, 13,000 to 13,500 years ago is the beginning of Clovis. What we call, for lack of a very creative name, pre-Clovis archaeology, earlier sites than Clovis, things become very controversial. Across the, just North America for a moment, there's probably 25 or 30 sites that we would all argue about, varying degrees of agreement on those, but there's probably three or four, maybe five or six that we would agree are, in fact, actually pre-Clovis sites at this point. Page Ladson in the Osceola River being one of them. Vero's kind of verging on the edge of being one of those now, and we'll see how that plays out in the next few months here.
And another one of these creatures I wanted to ask you about is the Pleistocene tapir. What is a tapir?
Yes. The tapir is, it's a parasyndactyl. It's a relative of horses, but I'm trying to not describe it as a potato with a little snout. They're pudgy little round guys that that live in watery environments and eat a lot of vegetable browse and stuff. The tapir here was the first one that had a complete dentition. Somebody found a complete skull of a tapir.
Oh, wow.
And it eventually got named Tapir viroensis for this complete specimen. Some teeth and partial bones and other things had been found over the years beforehand, but this is the one where somebody was able to really conclusively say, oh, this is what this animal looks like, this is what its teeth are all like. And so we wear it as a bit of a badge of honor that Tapir viroensis is from right across the canal from where we're working on.
Which was going to be almost a water treatment site.
Correct. So, and unfortunately, in the 100 years since Sellards worked here, the canal has had some, a couple of hurricanes that have been really bad and wiped out a significant portion of the site. So where we're excavating, we've been very lucky to find a large intact layer of Holocene and Pleistocene soil that's not been disturbed, and that's what we've been working on excavating now.
And we talked a little bit about that, Sarah, about here around Naples. You said that there was an ancient burial area. Tell me a little bit more about that that got lost. I mean, it's lost, so there's not, I guess, a whole lot to know, but how do you know about it?
Sure. So the Bay West site, as I was saying, it's located near Naples, and it was found in the 1980s when they were doing dredging for Cypress Pond. When they were dredging, they found these human bones, and they, I think, you know, someone passing by was able to alert the local archaeological society, and they did some salvage excavations where they screened the dredge spoils. So we think it was an archaic mortuary pond. Human bone, wood tools, and lithics were all identified there. And those were donated to the Collier County Museum down in Naples. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, you know, because the site was identified during construction, obviously that's not always your ideal, the ideal way you want to find a site. You'd prefer to find it through research and everything. And again, I think it just really highlights, after that, there was some public outcry. So the laws protecting archaeological sites, especially with regards to water treatment and that type of thing, were strengthened. But still, there is a need to, you know, before something is built, an archaeologist should ideally go and check that out. But depending on the type of project, an archaeologist doesn't necessarily always go out. So for things that involve federal money, so like roads, gas pipelines, even cell phone towers, typically an archaeologist will have to go out and check, investigate those. But then depending on the local laws, if it's private development, that might not necessarily always happen. And again, like I said, you know, we definitely are doing a lot of building here in Southwest Florida, especially in the Fort Myers and the Naples area. So it's really critical that we protect these sites now, you know, whether and identify the sites that we want to save. Obviously, we won't be able to save every site, but then try and protect either through full-scale investigation or some other manner these other archaeological sites, especially the older ones, which are extremely rare.
All right. Well, I want to finish up real quick by not looking at the past, but looking ahead. Andy, can you tell me about the South Side dig your team's working on now? And you said that there are some new discoveries that you're pretty excited about.
Sure. Really, this is the very nature of archaeology always means the best stuff is found at the very end of the season. And so last year, with 10 days to go in our third season, we started to find small flakes of bone in our Pleistocene soil. We ended up in 10 days exposing about 60 of them. And we only collected a handful, but most importantly, we collected four teeth, that two of which are complete enough to be positively identified as molars of Bison antiquus, the extinct 8-foot-tall buffalo that was here. When we tried to remove some of the additional bones, including our biggest piece, which is about 2 feet long, we pedestaled it. We were trying to get it ready to jacket it and just remove it in one big piece with some of the adhering soil around it. And we found another bone below it. So we spent a little time, well, let's see if we can get them both. And then we found another bone below that. So we know we have a layer right there with at least three bones stacked up. It appears to be that we're going to find an awful lot more of that. As near as we can tell, we're right on the tip of the iceberg. We have an awful lot of animal bone about 6 or 8 feet away from a big smudge of charcoal that has some burnt bone in it as well. We're a little high on that area, so we're about 4 inches above the bison bone, where we're just starting to get all the charcoal. It's starting to look like a kill or processing site next to a where somebody had a fire. We need unequivocal human artifacts in that layer. They don't have to be Clovis points or recognizable finished tools. If they're just made from stone that we know came from Ocala, we know that we have people prior to 13,000 years ago. And the more prior, the more contentious our finds will become. But the wonderful thing will be, no matter how contentious they end up being, we will have demonstrated, if we get lucky and if we're right about what we think we're seeing, that Sellards was right about the site, that people, in fact, were here in Vero at the end of the Pleistocene at this site.
It sounds like you're getting closer and closer to answering that 100-year-old question. Well, we're going to have to leave it there for today. Thanks to my guests looking at archaeology in South Florida. That was Sarah Ayers-Rigsby with the Florida Public Archaeology Network. And joining us from the Old Vero site near Vero Beach was Andy Hemmings with the Old Vero Ice Age Site Committee. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Julie.
All right.
Thank you.
You are listening to Gulf Coast Live. Thanks for joining us after President Trump's press conference with UK Prime Minister Theresa May. Coming up next on our show, dealing with a new country's legal bureaucracy can be tough, and with little legal assistance even available to you, being a new immigrant may seem almost impossible. Next, we'll talk with two women who are working to change that. We'll be right back.